This episode of the Halloween Podcast is brought to you by Acorns, the app that invests your change automatically. If you're like me, you have zero inside of your savings for future you. What Acorns does is rounds up all of your debit card purchases and invests that change for you automatically. I got started months ago and my account is slowly growing for future me. I didn't even notice it coming out of my bank account. It's that subtle. Support the Halloween Podcast by signing up using our link. You get a $5 sign-on bonus, and so do we. Just go to thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns, click on the banner, and get signed up. That's thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns. Now let's get the show started. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Halloween Podcast. I am your host, Lyle Perez, and on this episode, we are going to continue our discussion on Welcome to Camp Nightmare with my guest, Daniel Montgomery. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. How are you, Lyle?
I am doing great. Doing good. Excited to get into part two of Welcome to Camp Nightmare, because part one was a doozy.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And for anyone who didn't catch the last episode, Daniel is from the Welcome to Deadcast podcast, I
guess. The Goosebumps podcast,
The Goosebumps
yes.
podcast. And, yes. Yeah. What do you guys do on that one?
We go through each Goosebumps book and TV episode and just break it down. Do all things Goosebumps. And I was saying last episode, we have done the first 62 books, the first original 62, and now we are on to the Goosebumps short stories, and we'll continue to go through them as long as there are Goosebumps to be read. We will be doing them. So give us a listen.
Yes, please give them a listen. It's a good show. I've listened to a couple of episodes. They do Goosebumps right.
Thank you. We're detailed. We go through it, and we have a good time while we do it.
Yes, that's always fun. So, in this one, we are covering Welcome to Camp Nightmare, which I keep saying because I'm so excited to get into part two. So let's just fly right into there. The door opens, and who is there?
It's Saber. I'm kidding. It's Larry. It's just dumb old Larry standing there.
Yeah, one thing that R.L. Stine taught me was, because I mean I write kids books too, kind of like a Goosebumps feel. I've written a couple of them, and one thing that I did learn from him was every chapter has to end in a cliffhanger in order for them to want to come back to keep reading, is his thought. I forgot where I heard him say that.
He is the king of that.
Yeah, like if you read his books, I would say about 95% of the end of the chapter is a cliffhanger for you to continue reading. And I took that from him. So every single end of the chapter in the book that I wrote, Hand Puppet Horror, every chapter ends with a cliffhanger for you to want to continue to the next one. And then most of the time, it's something dumb. Like,
it's
Larry.
Like a fake out.
Yes. Yeah. It's always that. And like, I have to give him credit for teaching me that, because it really helped keeping the listeners or the readers going, which is what he's good at. Because I mean, he's up to what, 6,000 of these now?
Oh my gosh, something like that.
But yeah, good old Larry.
Just Larry, obnoxious Larry, who doesn't even flinch when they say Saber ate Roger, help. Please help. We're in mortal danger. He just doesn't even respond to it, really. He's like, what are you guys doing in here? You should be outside. Survival night, basically.
Yeah, he keeps telling them to go. That what are they doing out of the tents? And at one point, he kicks Colin, and Colin goes, ah.
And like, yeah, Colin was like hiding under one of the bunks in his sleeping bag cocoon.
Larry goes and he's like, I'm gonna go tell Uncle Al that you guys are not cooperating. And zero mention about Saber comes out of his mouth. I don't even know at this point. I don't even think Larry even knows what Saber is, because he does not mention it once.
He's deliberately, like, he's absolutely ignoring any mention of Saber completely, so we just don't even know. No. And he leaves.
He's out. And Billy says, like, hey, you guys get some rest. We gotta watch the door. I'll watch the first watch. But then it looks like he takes all the watches, because we get to the morning shot and he's still there with his bat, like,
that's right,
up against the door. So Jay did not take the second watch.
Ever the good guy, Billy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And as the night's going on, we get to see, like, Saber in the background doing whatever he does at night. While Billy's
sort of
watching.
Shakily howling at the moon.
So morning comes, and they go and find Uncle Al. They are determined to go and find him. So first they go to the lodge, and the kids ask Larry, and, like, at one point, Larry's like trying to eat his food, and Billy comes with a spoon, puts it on his utensils. So he means business, that Billy. And he asks where Uncle Al is, because they need to talk to him. And Larry says that he's nowhere. He's nowhere to be found.
He says he's busy.
He's busy. And he left Larry in charge, which I don't know if Larry's supposed to be, like, second in command. I don't think we got a second in command other than Uncle Al.
It seems like he is.
It seems like a weird choice to be. But then again, I mean, we know the ending. So we try to go back thinking about, like, why would he leave him in charge? Why is Larry being such an idiot? And then we go flash forward and go, oh, yeah, now all that makes sense. But now that I'm trying to decipher it without knowing the ending, it just seems weird.
It does. But I mean, again, with that knowledge of the ending, then we're like, oh, of course you would put somebody totally inept and terrible in charge to see how if Billy can rise up to the occasion, basically.
Yeah. At any rate, yeah.
Larry goes as far, Billy brings up Roger getting eaten alive by Saber, basically. And Larry's like, I don't even know a Roger. Now get out of here and go to the lake. Put on your bathing suit. You know, you need to be swimming at the lake right now.
Yeah, like, they can't even enjoy breakfast or anything like that. So they get their stuff, and they start talking about, like, the forbidden bunk, and what if all of the kids are there, all of the, like, missing kids. Like, there's been more other than Roger and
Mike.
So maybe all of Roger's pieces are at the forbidden bunk. Who knows?
Maybe.
Billy splits up from the other guys, which, I mean, in horror, he never split up, right? I mean, that's kind of one of the tropes, where the second you split up is when everyone dies.
For sure.
So,
but Billy's on a mission.
Yeah. He wants to find Uncle Al, make him understand what's going on so they can get the heck out of there or do whatever they need to do. So he finds a payphone, which, total 90s reference, because I remember seeing those all the time in the 90s, but now I don't see any.
Oh, never.
No. And it doesn't work, of course. It's, like, broken. And Uncle Al seems to have come out of nowhere. And
it's kind of a good scare.
Yeah. It scares the crap out of Billy.
Yeah, he pops up and you know, Billy basically pulls the phone out of the wall. It's just like a prop.
Yeah. That should have been clue number one, that this whole thing is like a soundstage.
Oh, yeah. And Uncle Al is laughing hysterically, and it's like, ah, this phone, it's a joke. Isn't it a great joke?
That's kind of a mean joke.
Yeah, he's like, no one would ever put a line all the way out here.
Which, I mean, this is where cell phones would have really come in handy.
Yes, this would have been a completely different, very different book or story. if there had been cell phones.
It was so much simpler in the 90s.
So much, so.
Yes. So Uncle Al starts telling them that, like, oh, you're homesick, huh, Billy? And Billy's like, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
He's like, well, that's why you got to write the letters.
Yes, you write them every day.
Every day. And he basically says, you know, I don't know how that helps necessarily, but it's like you don't get to talk to your parents, but you get to send them letters that they'll never get. Like, there you go. And then as there's this really great moment of Uncle Al walking off or starting to walk off, and Billy brings up Roger, and Uncle Al responds to the question about Roger facing away from Billy, is just kind of like looking into the camera almost.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's no camper here named Roger, not a first name, not a last name. We've never had a camper here named Roger. Get to the lake, Billy. You know, so we know, like, not that we didn't, but we know Uncle Al is not to be trusted.
Right. Shady character, but only the viewer. I mean, does he?
Right.
I don't think he turns around so Billy sees his face.
He doesn't. Like, so, it's all facing away from Billy.
So as far as Billy's concerned, Uncle Al could have been saying that with a smile. for all Billy's concerned.
Except, I mean, when he says, get to the lake, Billy, it's pretty
sinister.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. That's true.
But, you know.
So
Billy gets to the lake.
Yeah, he skedaddles right out of there. And Colin and Jay, they're on a canoe already, like in the middle of the lake. And they're
having a great time.
Yeah, they're like splashing water on each other and, you know, all the stuff that boys do.
And of course.
Billy comes up and he starts yelling, but it doesn't look like this lake's really that big. So I don't think that Jay and Colin wouldn't be able to hear him. They would be able to tell that he was saying that there was no Roger, because he has to repeat that a couple of times.
Yes.
They get to the point where they're like, what are you saying? They do the classic, put your hand up to your ear, I can't hear. And they make the canoe tip over.
Yes.
And, oh wait, no, before that, Larry comes and starts being all psycho about...
Oh, Larry's like, you guys can't be out there without life jackets.
Yeah, like the life jackets. And this looks like clearly from like the 50s life jackets.
I don't even know what they're like, sad drab sort of like bags that you would hang over your neck. I don't know what they are.
Like, they haven't been used since the 50s.
Looks like they've never been used.
Never.
Or been used quite a lot. And he throws the life jackets to them, and they sort of like half reach out and fall out of the canoe reaching for the life jacket.
Yes, that's right.
And then they instantly disappear in the water.
Like, I'm talking, they're there for 5 seconds, and then Colin's first gone. Jay's all like, I'll save him. And then, famous last words.
No, like, struggling in the water, no nothing. They just go under and never come back up.
I don't even think I see air bubbles come out of the lake.
And Larry freaks. Larry's like, oh, I was never here. I didn't see any of this. I'm out of here. And just runs off.
Yeah, and Billy's like, Larry, what are you doing? Like, you're in charge. And he's just gone, leaves, freaks out.
Bye, Larry. Mm-hmm. Billy, like, I think you would, I forgive this episode for 1,000 things, but I think you would, Billy jumps in the water to sort of find Jay and Colin, but nothing really happens.
No.
He spends very little time in there, you know, looking to see where their dead bodies are or where they might be.
Yeah. I mean, he goes underwater a couple of times, but I'm pretty sure he might have contacts on. He doesn't want to lose them. So he doesn't want to look, you know, he doesn't have any goggles or anything.
Sure. Hard to see in the lake. There you go. We'll give that to him.
Yeah. Give him that.
So Billy decides to, I don't know, run through the woods.
Montage, yes.
Yes, time for a montage.
Mm-hmm.
Saber's sort of following him, maybe. Everything at the camp seems kind of empty. There's no one on the baseball field. There's no one at the lodge. Everyone's gone, it seems like.
It's a ghost town.
It's a ghost town.
Camp. Ghost camp.
Ghost camp. Goosebumps number 45. Ghost camp.
Is that really one?
Yes, and then there's the Curse of Camp Cold Lake, where the main character gets out of the water, and when she gets out of the water, the camp's everybody's at the camp is gone.
Oh boy.
So, you know, if it ain't broke, you know, just keep doing it. This is where we get this montage moment, which I think you may like, Lyle, of him sort of changing clothes and getting his baseball bat ready.
Yes.
Ready to fight.
That's like, that's the best part of this episode. He's sitting there like, just like, ah, what am I going to do? I don't know. And like, the bunk is empty. Like, everything is gone except for like the beds. That's the only thing that are there. And so he gets dressed and like, I don't know what he's thinking he's going to do, but well, actually, I think later on he says like he's leaving. But I don't know how he thinks he's going to accomplish that.
I don't know. Beat everybody up with a baseball bat on his way out. That's the only thing.
He's going to beat up every single camper.
Well, he definitely is going to check out the forbidden bunk, right? Like, yes. That is the big question mark here. And as he is, after his sort of like suit up action movie moment, he is walking towards the forbidden bunk, and it's just so windy all of a sudden. Very windy.
Yes.
And letters are kind of flying through the camp. These letters, mm-hmm. that the campers, you know, have supposedly been writing to their parents. And he even sees one of, you know, what he sees a letter from, who was it, Mike or somebody?
I think it was Mike is the one he reads.
Yeah. And they're all these letters are coming from the forbidden bunk.
Yeah. And he's like, he's hearing different kids. Well, like, we are hearing different kids, like, reading their stories, or not their stories,
yes,
their
like voiceover, yeah, like their haunted whirling voices like flying through the air.
And I think if memory serves me correctly, we hear one from Roger because we hear his laugh.
Oh yes, of course.
You gotta have that one in there.
Of course, can't be without that, the jokester.
No.
So he goes into the bunk.
Yes,
the forbidden bunk. And it is just so much like Halloween store moss hanging from every inch of the bunk, basically.
Yes,
just endless hanging moss, and it's sort of spooky. And like a dirty looking Dawn is in there.
Yeah,
like sort of like dirt on her face. She's been hiding in there, I guess. And
but for how long? Like, it makes it seem like she's been there for, like, weeks because of how dirty she is.
Yes, she does kind of look, like, cartoonishly, like orphan dirty. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think this is day two.
I think it's day two, yes. And she says that similar things have been happening at her camp with, like, her friend Dory, who is a character in the book, but not so much in the TV episode, how a girl was mauled by a bear and the counselors were like, oh, she'll be fine. And then that girl basically disappeared. And Billy's like, yes, same thing at our camp. This is crazy. And they see that all the letters are in the forbidden bunk, and it's letters from years ago, not just letters of, you know, from Billy and Mike and Roger and everybody, but years and years and years of letters basically.
Yeah.
And, that's when they hear a whistle noise outside.
Not a train.
Not a train whistle.
Mm-mm.
It's
Uncle Al.
It's a very militaristic Uncle Al. Billy says that he'll come back at what? At lights out or something? He'll be back at night.
Yeah.
And Don was just going to stand in the shadows and wait until then, I guess. And then maybe they'll figure out their way.
Yeah, they're good. They're going to head out, both of them.
And then this is where things start to get a little insane, even more.
Where they get a little insane? Where they start?
Yes, this is where the scariness just starts.
Okay.
All the rest of the campers are now lined up, and Uncle Al and all the counselors are dressed in camouflage, and they're handing guns or little crossbows, yes, to all of the campers. And Uncle Al has said that there's a girl loose from the girls' camp and that they need to shoot her. and Billy is like, what? Absolutely not. And
it just seems like a regular thing for Uncle Al. Like, yeah, we're just going to go out. We're going to grab her and shoot her.
It's like shoot her on sight.
On sight.
And Billy's like, we can't kill her. And he's like, who said anything about kill? These are tranquilizer darts.
Yes.
And, you know, gives Billy a little crossbow for him to shoot Dawn, basically.
Yeah.
Whenever she may be seen. And it is the moment. It is the pinnacle moment of this,
yes.
The two episodes. And Billy decides to, turns his crossbow onto Uncle Al.
Yeah. And then Uncle Al starts telling him that, you know, Jay, Colin, Roger, there's no campers by those names. Like, and then Billy should have said, well, then who are my campmates? Like, who's in my bunk?
Who's in bunk four? Yeah.
What kind of a counselor are you that you put one camper in a bunk by himself?
Uncle Al sort of like comes back. Billy doesn't say those things. He should have, but
yeah,
Uncle Al comes back and is like, "Oh, you're just you're just so homesick. You're imagining things."
Imagining my own bunkmates?
Yeah, basically. And Uncle Al's like, "Put down the gun, Billy," or whatever. And
I ain't doing it.
Big old tense moment. And then Billy shoots him.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like a fake, basically.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
And Uncle Al sort of reacts like he's been shot and then immediately does sort of a turn and says, "Billy passed," and starts cheering.
Yay.
Way to go, Billy. You did great.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's all a test.
It was all this big test. All the old campers start coming out of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And each one, like, congratulating Billy. Even Larry's like, "I knew you'd pass. You're so great, Billy.
So good."
And Dawn's like, "You were wonderful, Billy." And Roger's like, "You know, I'm in one piece.
One piece. Ha, ha, ha." Get it? One piece.
And Mike throws a rubber snake at him. He's like, "It was a rubber snake, you know." And then Billy's parents come out of the woods.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Mom? Dad?
What's going on? I don't know." And the biggest note that I have here about the parents is that the dad's voice kind of sounds like it's pre-recorded.
You know, I'm sure it was.
It does
there
not sound like him.
So many moments in Goosebumps when I believe they ended up re-recording a lot of the vocals.
So weird.
It is so weird. We find out that, well, Billy's parents are scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Arlstein loves to have kids with parents who are scientists. And they are going on a key expedition to a very dangerous place.
Yeah.
And they want to take Billy, but they needed to make sure that he was equipped and ready and allowed to go and pass the test, basically. And everybody said, "You passed your test. You knew when to follow the rules and when to break the rules. And everybody here is an actor working at the lab."
The lab.
It's such a great, crazy twist.
It is.
Like, so, so fun.
Yeah, it was a test. And then Saber comes out with George. He's like mechanically moving it around. And it does a scream. And...
It's just revealed that Saber is an animatronic in the story, and George is controlling him, and there was never really a Saber.
No, so all of those moments that we got of the Saber's point of view were null and void, really, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it doesn't actually make any sense, but we'll take it.
Yeah. And he was getting test, and he was getting test because the parents are going to a faraway place. And where is this place?
It's a very faraway place where the aliens are dangerous and unpredictable. A place called Earth.
Dun, dun, dun.
They look up into the sky instead of a moon. Basically, it's just Earth.
Yeah, it's Earth. Which, were they supposed to be in the moon? Or I don't...
I don't even think Arlstein can answer that. I who knows? Who even knows? It doesn't.
Is there a planet between us and Mars?
Not Not the one that we can see.
Because Earth looks like it's about the distance from the moon.
It does. So maybe this is some colony on the moon. I don't know.
I mean, they seem to have pretty good, like, green foliage on the moon.
Yeah, it looks a lot like Earth, you know. And the aliens, like, they certainly look like humans. But it's just such a crazy, stupid twist. I love it. I genuinely love it so much.
It's a fun twist if you're like 10.
Yes, absolutely.
If this was like a Stephen King twist, I'd be like, whoa, dude. I don't get it.
In some ways, I wish almost every story ended like that. Just like any problems you had, like writing a story or any questions, you're like, oh, well, actually, we're not even on Earth.
No.
We're on some other planet that looks and moves and sounds exactly like Earth, but it's not Earth. It's just some big twist. So dumb, so fun.
It is very dumb, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Nope, not at all. It's Mm-mm. exactly the way it should be.
Exactly how I wanted this one to end.
Exactly.
So that is it. That is Welcome to Camp Nightmare. It's hard to say because I've seen a lot of the Goosebumps ones now that we could easily access them. I really wish like Netflix and stuff was around, or at least some type of where you can find these type of thing back in the 90s, because I would have really have loved to have watched a lot of these that I missed, because for whatever reason, if you miss it when it's airing, you missed it. So
yeah, that's it.
So at the time, Welcome to Camp Nightmare was probably my favorite one because it was one of the only ones I actually caught.
Sure. It's a good one. It's a really good one.
It is. But like I said in the other episode, I don't think I would have loved this one as much if it wasn't one of the ones that I caught and one of the ones that I was able to watch over and over and over again because I had it on VHS
sure.
tape.
Of course.
Nonetheless, it was good.
Yeah.
But probably not my favorite. I mean, not scary.
Yeah, it's not. You probably won't keep you up at night.
No.
No nightmares. No nightmares from Camp Nightmare.
Yeah. None at all, I would think. All right. So now that we got that done, let's move into... what are the differences between the book and the show?
We talked about this a little bit, you and I.
Yes.
And, you know, I feel like, and we do have a list of the differences, but one of the main things that I remember from the book is the very first chapter of the book is, it's interesting, Lyle, because... they're describing the sort of bus trip from Billy's perspective, right? Or right. Arlstein is describing the, and he sort of mentions, like, if I remember correctly, it's like red hills and gold sands or something as they're driving through, and it kind of sounds like just like flowery descriptive you know, words. And then looking back on it, you're like, oh, are you just describing like an alien planet? Like,
right.
is that what it looked like? The very first chapter, instead of a saber, the kids get off the bus and they're, it's like a the kids are sort of cornered by a pack of silvery sort of alienish wolves. It's a very strange start to the book where you're reading it and you're like, what are these creatures that Arlstein is describing? And it's quickly dispelled, similar to the TV episode, but there is like a little bit more of an alien hint at the beginning of the book than there is in the TV episode. And Saber does not show up, or at least the mention of Saber doesn't show up till later. It's these wolves, like alien wolves at the beginning of the book.
Yeah. I haven't read this book in a long time. I think I read it maybe 5 years ago, and I did know the differences then, but now like it's escaping me. I do vaguely remember that there were like wolves in it and not a saber.
Yeah, it is. It's like a little bit of a different, you know, scare right from the top.
Yeah,
but I think the TV episode does a good job of adapting it. It's just there are more characters in the book. You know, there's Dory. Dawn is a little bit more airtime in the book, and Dory, sort of like her campmate, who is mentioned in the episode, she actually is with Dawn in the sort of forbidden bunk moment. Hmm. It's not only just Dawn, it's Dawn and Dory. So when they're trying to shoot the campers, basically, it's not only just Dawn, that there are two girls that have escaped, basically. And I believe there's more campers that get more. Tommy and Chris are two other campers that aren't in the TV episode that end up being sort of the canoe victims, I think. Because I think more of the campers get apparently sort of torn apart by mysterious Saber, even though we don't even see Saber in the book.
Hmm. Kind of seems like it would be the other way around. They would spend more money on they would save money if they didn't show Saber in the TV show. But if R.L. Stein just writes it in, it doesn't really cost them anything.
Right, yeah. I wonder, like, there is some sort of interesting value of having Saber in the TV episode, because I think, you know, kids want to see monsters. But if it doesn't look good, you can just at the end of the episode be like, yeah, it's an animatronic in the story, so sorry.
That's true. Yeah.
We don't need to fool you that much. But yeah, I don't know. Those were the differences in the books, from the books that I could remember. But I think it does a pretty good, and I think that at the end of the book, it's actually guns as opposed to crossbows.
Yeah.
That are sort of like, I believe I remember they're literally rifles in the book.
Yeah, it says that they were rifles and not some unnamed weapon.
Sure.
Yeah, because in the show, they look like crossbows, but I've never seen like one handheld crossbow. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like it's mostly everything from the list. The last one I don't really get. Billy never saves Larry from drowning after he falls off the canoe. Instead of being in a canoe, Larry shoves Billy into the water after Strogorm runs away.
Oh, that's ringing a little bit of a bell. I think there was a moment in the book where Billy actually saved Larry from drowning. Like, Larry couldn't swim or something, and there was a moment as part of sort of the test that, you know, Billy's character is supposed to be going through, that he actually saved sort of Larry's life from drowning within that sort of lake canoe moment. If I remember that, I think that's right.
Got it. So yeah, those are some of the differences. If you want to catch the book, go pick it up. You can get it anywhere, really. I mean, I think you can find it on eBay, Amazon, or just go down to your local library. I'm pretty sure they still have a big old section of Goosebumps. And
I hope they do.
They should. I mean, Goosebumps,
they should.
It would definitely be something kids would read. I mean, my daughter was reading them for a while. She found my stash of Goosebumps books, and
I love
she was
that.
Reading them. Now I'm trying to get my son involved, but he's still learning to read, and it's taking a lot longer than expected because now the distance learning, and I don't think he's
right.
learning as much as he needs to, and so it might take him a little bit longer to catch on. But once he does, I have a box full of Goosebumps books that he is welcome to read. All right, so let's move into some trivia. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So this episode was adapted into Goosebumps Presence book number 3. I don't mm-hmm. know what that means.
There was a series of books, pretty short, that were called Goosebumps Presents that was the TV episodes that included pictures from the TV episodes. So it was more like a direct adaptation, really bare bones, but a direct adaptation of the TV episodes directly into a book that showed a lot of the cover was pictures from the episode. There were pictures within the book itself.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, that's cool. I have a picture of it right here. I actually vaguely remember seeing this somewhere.
Yeah. I don't remember how many of them that they did, but it was sort of a, you know, an extra little thing. I don't think R.L. Stein wrote them.
All right. So next one. When the episode first aired, it was originally intended to have the theme that the Cuckoo Clock of Doom and the Girl Who Cried Monster had. Instead, it was replaced with the original theme. except when the word goosebumps appears through the door of the house, the word continues to move.
Right. Yes. This is in, that's in reference to sort of the, you know, the opening credits sequence. You know, they're trying to, they were continuing to sort, like, even still through like the third and fourth season, they were tweaking things and adding things and adding sound effects and digital bats and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I do remember that some of the intros were different, but I didn't pay any attention to it.
Yeah, I was that kid that absolutely paid attention to those things. And yes, there was, you know, is certain things like, you know, I'm sure everyone listening to this is familiar with the opening credits, but you see the shot panning past the dog whose eyes light up.
Yeah.
They added a bark into that.
Yeah, they did.
That bark was not always there. That was something that got added as sort of time went along. And this I think is talking about the very last moment when the word goosebumps appears through the door of the house, and they started to add like a sort of wavy effect to the word goosebumps. Really trying things.
When my son was watching it, he was looking at the G from Goosebumps, and he was like, what is that? Is that like a snake or something? He's like, no, buddy, that's supposed to be the G from the Goosebumps. And he's like, I don't get it. It's like, okay, just shut up.
Yes. Just it's watch. The shadow of the G that's going over the town, and yeah, just watch.
It's like, yeah, is that a dog? I was like, yeah, it's a dog. Oh, why is his light? Why is his eyes light up? Like, I don't know. I really don't know, buddy. Don't question everything, please. Just watch.
Just sit in silence and watch, please.
Yes. All right. So next one, the guy who played Roger, Benjamin Plenner, played Jonathan Hall in season 3's The Haunted House Game.
Yes, remember that. I definitely remember that.
I don't think I've ever seen that one, but it sounds interesting.
It's one of the ones that's pulled from the collections of short stories called The Tales to Give You Goosebumps. And yes, it's one of those that was sort of expanded into a 30-minute episode. And he's one of the two lead characters.
Gotcha. All right. Following in the same suit, the guy who played Mike played Billy Brown in season 3's Perfect School.
Cool. Yeah, same thing. Also another story adapted from the short story collections.
Nice. Looks like, they reused some of these actors. I really want to know more about the production of Goosebumps.
I know.
Like, it's like this and Are You Afraid of the Dark? Because they kind of did the same thing, too, where some of the characters, like, reappeared, or some of the actors reappeared in different ones.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to know if they had, like, these kids, like, on call and be like, hey, we need this kid to fill in. Come on,
there's
man.
There's one that they used 3 times. So, like, you know, I truly bet it was not easy to find young actors that could carry 30 minutes and do it convincingly. I mean, you even alluded last episode to the fact of the acting's not phenomenal in this, mm-mm. like, especially at the beginning. It's not great. And they have even recast actors. The actor that played a character in The Haunted Mask, for The Haunted Mask 2, they recast him. And I don't know exactly why that is, but I do know that character became the protagonist of Haunted Mask 2. So he had and it was an hour's worth of stuff to do. So that actor had to be relatively strong, you know? So if somebody's good, why not use them a few times?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, even, the main character, Billy, was played by Kai Erik Erikson, who was in Are You Afraid of the Dark 2? So he was in both of them.
Yeah. Why not do a trade?
Yeah. I mean, they're both Canadian shows, so I'm pretty sure there's a lot of actors that went back and forth on both of these.
You know, it's so funny rewatching. As my brother and I go through these episodes, we rewatch them just like you and I did for this. And I spent part of this year watching Schitt's Creek. And that is a Canadian show, and so many actors from that show are in Goosebumps.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So funny. It's like the Canadian pool must not be the widest, you know. So like, why not I just love seeing some of the smaller parts in some of these episodes that have actors that are still working today. I think that's so great.
Yeah, a lot of these guys are still working. If you look them up on IMDb, they have quite a few credits, a lot of recent ones too. So, yeah, they're still working.
I think that's great.
Yeah, can you imagine? They're probably all like getting a lot of requests from podcasts. You want to come on the show?
I know. You should ask them, Lyle. See if you can find them.
I will try, but I mean, honestly, it's really hard to try to find a celebrity who wants to come on the Halloween podcast.
Well, eventually, someday soon, they'll come around.
I've tried. I'm trying. Like, last year was kind of a fluke year because that's when I was moving to Tennessee, so I didn't really get to do the countdown or anything like that. So,
right,
a lot of episodes I couldn't really do. So. My downloads were like way, they were still fairly good, but I didn't release any new episodes. So imagine if I had of released episodes, my numbers would have been a lot bigger. So I'm hoping this year, since I'm going to release a lot of the Halloween content, that the numbers will grow to a point where I can use that as leverage and say, hey, I mean, you know, the Halloween podcast last year got 200,000 downloads or whatever.
Yeah.
Use that as a way to get these people to do it, because I think right now they're a lot of the people that I have approached don't think that it will do anything for them, I guess.
Oh, sure.
So they're very picky and choosy as to which ones they go on. Like,
yeah.
If you listen to the home improvement episode I did a while ago, with April, when we did
yes,
The Haunting of Taylor Home. No, mm-hmm. Not that one. We did I was a teenage Taylor, that one, with Larry Hankin. He was on there, and he played Halloween Larry.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to get him to come onto the show to answer the question if he was ever on the set of Tool Time. And I've seen him in a lot of other podcasts, like doing interviews, and I'm working on trying to get him to do it. But for whatever reason, I think he might be burnt out on him. So,
oh, maybe
I'm to the point where, like, yeah, if he just declines, I'm just going to say, yeah, okay,
sure.
I'll leave him alone. But I'm starting to think that a lot of these types of people are giving interviews to a lot of podcasts, and eventually they're just going to be burnt out.
Sure, I get that.
I got to find somebody who nobody has really gone after yet and try to get them to do it. But, all right, so next trivia. We got Carrie Duff, who has an uncredited appearance as a camper, played Margot in season one's Night of the Living Dummy 2.
Yes, she's one of my favorites.
Is she?
That episode.
Imagine this one.
Carrie Duff seems great. I don't remember her from this, but that episode is definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, I don't think you can't really get a good glimpse at a lot of these campers because they're just, they're not really prominent, so you just see a flash and then they're gone.
Yeah, especially the girls.
Yes.
Because we spend we barely spend any time with them.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that really sticks out to me is the counselor, the girl counselor. She has a speaking role. That's probably why
right. Yes, you hear her voice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The rubber snake that Mike was bitten by is seen in two close-up shots as a real ball python.
Well, now we know what type of snake that was.
Yes, I don't think they're venomous. I don't think pythons are. But I'm not going to fact check it. Let's continue. All right. Here's a goof. In the scene where Billy is wielding... In the scene where Billy is wielding his weapon, there is a repeated continuity error in between shots. In one shot, the arrow in the crossbow has a suction cup tip, but it doesn't have a rubber tip in the next shot. All right, so basically the crossbow gun, whatever it is, one scene it does it, one scene, I don't know. I wasn't paying that close of attention to it because I was too busy with the tension of Uncle Al and Billy.
I didn't notice that.
No. Footage from this episode would later be reused in an old story.
Yes, that's right. They do. They also use they use footage of this in Stay Out of the Basement too. That sort of explosion moment in the woods, they show that a few times later. And they even for Stay Out of the Basement, Lyle, they take that shot and they pixelate it a little bit to make it look like more like a video game.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if they spent that money on the pyrotechnics, they're going to use it a few times.
Yeah, in the, what did he say? The latest technology?
Yes, latest technology.
Yep, they're going to reuse it.
Yeah.
Right, so when the kids first arrive at the empty spot, Roger chokingly says they're at Camp Nowhere. This name would later be used as the title for the ninth book in R.L. Stine's The Nightmare Room series.
Yes.
Coincidentally, that book also had a character's name, Mike and Larry.
Well, there you go.
But Mike and Larry are very common, so.
Yeah.
With how many books he writes, he's going to run out of names.
Oh, for sure.
And then it says on a side note, this is also a reference to the 1994 film Camp Nowhere, starring Christopher Lloyd. I don't think that's like a far stretch that it's referencing that movie. But it might. I don't know.
I mean, I've never seen it.
I haven't either. I really should revisit it.
Never seen it.
But the last one we got is of the two-part episodes to air in season one, this is the only one that did not receive a VHS release in North America.
Answer my question. There it is.
There it is, 100% completely. So I am happy that I caught it on my VHS Halloween is Cool tape.
Yes, there it was caught on VHS.
Yes. So for a while, I was probably the only
You're the only one?
That had a copy of Welcome to Camp Nightmare.
You should adjust that trivia.
I should. During this time, Lyle Perez of the Halloween podcast was the only one
to have. Only known, yes.
My claim to fame right there. Not the Halloween podcast, but that I was the only one that had this on a VHS tape.
Hey, both are a pretty big deal.
Yes. All right. So that is our discussion on Welcome to Camp Nightmare. Daniel, do you have any final thoughts on this episode?
I'm so glad you had it on VHS and were able to watch it so many times. It's such a little, it's such a sweet little time capsule that fits perfectly in the 90s. Can't work with cell phones. Summer camp seems like such a 90s kind of thing, and I'm so glad it exists. I'm so glad this was your this was your choice. This was your Goosebumps choice to review.
Well, I had to, because for whatever reason, this is the one that I always thought when I thought Goosebumps, because I did see a lot of them. I saw all the dummy ones; those were always around. The basement one, Welcome to Dead House. Like I saw a lot of them as they were going, but this one and the Mummy one were the only two that I actually got to relive constantly. So they stuck with me. It was a toss up always between this one and the Mummy one, but
Return of the Mummy, yeah.
After I rewatched that one, I was like, really, there's really not much we can like really talk about in this. It's very cut and dry, but Camp Nowhere, definitely. Or Camp Nightmare, we definitely could have done.
Yes.
So.
Completely.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a fun episode. It is on Netflix. If you have Netflix, go and watch them. The whole Goosebumps is on there.
Yes, definitely recommend.
It's accessible. If you have kids that were about your age when this was coming out, watch it with them. Enjoy it with them like I tried to do with my son. I used to do this type of stuff with Callie when she was the age I was when this stuff came out, but she's getting too old now, and I don't know, she's like a teenager now or something. I don't know. I try to ignore her now because I can't deal with that. So I moved on to my boy Callan. He's more animated though. He loves this stuff, and he's always up to watch some Are You Afraid of the Dark with Me or some Goosebumps, even though he laughs. Kind of takes me out of the moment, but enjoy it with your kids, because trust me, one day they're going to be like, I remember, they're going to talk to their kids and say that they'll remember that they used to watch this with grandma and grandpa till they're telling their kids.
The legacy must live on.
It will. And now that this stuff's all digital, this stuff's never going away. It's going to be here forever.
Good.
So those are our thoughts on Welcome to Kent Nightmare. Daniel, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Lyle. I really appreciate it. I'm such a huge fan of the podcast, and I'm honored to be included in it.
Thank you so much, because it means a lot that people are listening. People like the show. They really enjoy all of this Halloween scary goodness from our childhood. Like I say all the time, it's the Halloween podcast isn't just about horror. It is literally how we celebrated Halloween as a kid. Because let's face it, we might like Halloween now, but it's always going to be the Halloween as a kid that we remember and love.
100%.
So keep that in mind. Enjoy it. It's great. One more time, Daniel, go ahead and give us your podcast again. What's that about?
Yes, it's Welcome to Deadcast, the Goosebumps podcast. You can find us anywhere you get podcasts. And, oh, I forgot one thing, Lyle. I have a book of Halloween poetry that I wrote and also with like cute little illustrations. And there's an audiobook. If you're feeling extra Halloween-y, you can go to my website. The book is called The Bone Zone. And it is www.daniel-montgomery.com/thebonezone. Listen, there's some silly, dumb, fun, not quite kid-friendly sometimes, but sort of nostalgia-ish Halloween poetry that I wrote because I have literally nothing else to do. So check that out. But if you love Goosebumps, check out our podcast and say hi.
Yeah, do that. Check out The Bone Zone. That sounds like a...
I'll send it to you, Lyle. It's so dumb and fun. I think you'll get a kick out of it.
That would be awesome. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. And this is now episode 3 of our countdown to Halloween. Come back tomorrow because we have something very special. If memory serves me correctly, I will be talking about a very special Halloween promotion that happened in the early 90s. So come back tomorrow. Figure out what that is, and I will see you then. You guys have a good night.
And Roger?
Hey, Billy. Hollow One Piece. One Piece.